The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.
Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and with me today is the magazine's digital editor, Jess Mayhew. Hi, Jess.
Hi. I feel like an imposter. This is like your and Jane's project.
I'm excited to have you. You're pinch hitting for her today.
Pinch hitting, good baseball term.
I got it.
You got it right.
I'm learning now that baseball season's in full swing. Yeah. Thank you for sitting in
today. Oh, my God. No, thanks for having me. We're all so jealous of Jane over in Italy.
Yes. She must be having the best time. We miss her. But for those of you who don't know, Jess wears many, many hats around here, and one of them is covering all things drink and booze in the city. So craft beer, spirits, wine, cocktails, you name it.
Ciders, mead, all the things. Yeah.
Everything.
Now, Jane always says, I think it's really cute, she says she covers solids and I cover liquids.
Which I've never heard her say, which is really funny. You were telling me she says this all the time. I've never heard her say that.
Yeah, it's like one of her favorite lines. But I love it too, because, like, you know, which we'll get into today, there's a lot of like drink news, you know, whether it's beer or coffee or juice, or I mean, there's just a ton of different things going on in the city. So it's a lot to keep up with, just as you try to keep up with food every week. It's a ton.
But a ton.
Anyway, thanks for having me. I feel very honored to be on Local Flavor Live.
You know, so excited to have you. And so like Jess said, we will get into all of the drink news, but first let's roll through some food news. So Sophomore Coffee opened.
Yay.
So exciting. So Chris Fulton, he is known for his background. He headed up La Mille Coffee, which was in the Four Seasons a couple years ago now, right?
It's been a while. I loved La Mille. I think it was beloved around here. We work in Harbor East, so it was so nice to pop over there for a coffee. But he's great at what he does.
Yeah, I'm bummed it was a little before my time, but I'm excited to hang out at Sophomore all the time. So he and his partner, Ann Travers Fortune, they actually co-founded Charmington's in Remington as well. So they opened in Old Goucher, so it's actually the food and drink complex Sokla that is from Lane Harlan and the team of W.C. Harlan and Clavel. It's a cool space, and they're going to be doing house drip coffees, espresso drinks, flash brew options, and they're using Partners Coffee, which actually used to be Toby's Estate Coffee in Brooklyn, which Chris also worked at. He has a great resume.
Yeah, he does.
Definitely a veteran barista, and he's so great at what he does.
It's a cool space. Yeah. I remember when Lane was showing me Vadensonen for the first time before it opened. She took me over to Larder, which is their food concept, and then she took me down the stairs and showed me what Sophomore Coffee was going to look like. And, you know, at that point, it was just like cinder blocks and wood. And, but I was so amazed that a basement space was still able to get so much light, because you think basement and you just think dark and dingy, but there's these great windows, and the design looks so cool, what we've seen on Instagram.
Yes.
Haven't gotten a chance to stop by yet, but I'm so excited that it's finally open.
Yeah, it's such a great way to round up that whole complex, too. Larder's going to have the cafe and the market aspect, and, of course, Vadensonen, which I know you've been to with the natural wine.
Too many times. No, that's just another Lane. Lane and her husband opened it together. It's just like you automatically feel comfortable in that space.
So cool. Well, super psyched for them. And lots of openings this week. I was really excited, as always, to report all these different openings. We saw a new ramen shop open in Canton Crossing. There's this adorable pizza shop called Tiny Brick Oven that opened on Lake Street in Federal Hill. The owners of the Avenue Kitchen in Hamden reopened Garden Party, which is their cool little like wine and charcuterie kiosk at the Rotunda.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, which is adorable. I always, like, whenever I'm there over the summer, I see, like, the little kids running through the sprinklers, and it's nice for parents to be able to, like, go grab a glass of wine. And,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
At the end of the week, they're like, yep.
Yes. Yeah. So lots of openings this week, and, you know, of course, with all of the openings, there's sadly, one or two closings that we happen to see every once in a while. And this week we heard about Smoke closing in Cockeysville, which is a sad one.
Yeah, it's a real bummer. I was really surprised. Smoke has been an award winner for us a couple different times for Best of Baltimore. Their barbecue seems beloved. Their social media is wacky. I know you mentioned it in your piece, right?
Yeah, Josh used to do, I actually hadn't seen him in a while, but these, Josh White, the owner, used to do like these music videos with like these jingles that he would write about the day's special. So he would like write a little song about like a Nashville hot chicken sandwich or something like that. But just so creative. Like, I think that that's, you know, it's not rare. I think that we have a lot of that innovation in Baltimore. But to see a business really kind of take something like barbecue that has such historic roots and really make it their own in that way, with the creativity and, you know, the social media presence, which was great. They were doing so many pop-ups and collaborations.
They were in Cross Street for a little bit,
I actually went to lunch at that pop-up back before they really started to amp up construction for Cross Street Market. But
such good food. I'm sure whatever you ate was amazing.
Yes, I'm trying to remember what I had. It must have been like
ribs.
A staple. Yeah,
ribs
or something. Or pulled pork or something that was just so good. But yeah, I mean, it's super sad, but I think that the one upside is they put a really detailed announcement out on social media, and they did kind of tease that they're not going away for good, which is great. I could see them kind of continuing a pop-up presence and still being a part of the food community in that way, even if they don't have a brick and mortar anymore. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that this isn't the last we've seen of
Definitely.
Them.
And we've seen this before where restaurants close or, you know, remarket themselves and kind of come back fresh. So I'm hoping this is the case with Smoke. I know a lot of people in Baltimore County love that barbecue. And there's not, I mean, there are great barbecue options in the city, but there's not a ton.
You're right.
You could probably name five just, you know, off your hands. It's not like they're everywhere. So losing Smoke is definitely a blow to our barbecue scene. We hope to see them back in some form.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And in somewhat lighter news, I think people will be really happy to hear that the old Boathouse Canton space is getting reactivated this summer.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, I think, in the Canton community and beyond who just kind of like saw that space as like the place to go for nice weather and crushes.
Now, you're too young, but I remember when it was Bay Cafe, and it's just, Bay Cafe was like definitely of its time, sort of cheesy looking back. They would have like bikini contests and wet t-shirt contests and stuff. Yeah,
I'm thinking of like MTV Spring Break.
It was kind of like that. And it was like a little more shabby back then, but, you know, had like the sand and all that. But, you know, and then seeing what Boathouse was able to do and renovate it and kind of bring it a little more upscale. I always thought that space was so beautiful. So to have something back on the water there is going to be huge.
Yeah. So it's actually the team behind Bar Cucina and Bond Street Social.
Oh, that makes a lot
really
of sense.
It seems like a perfect fit. They are calling it Raw Bar.
Just Raw Bar?
Just Raw Bar. Oh, that's the name.
It's going to be a confusing Google search, but I guess you know what it is right away.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It's just very straightforward. So Raw Bar is going to be the new concept in the Boathouse space. At this point, we don't know too much about it. I know that they're still waiting for liquor board approval, which can sometimes delay things.
A long time. Yeah.
But they are really shooting for this summer. And I can only imagine, especially with a name like Raw Bar, they're going to be bringing back all of those seafood specialties that people loved at Boathouse. And, you know, there'll be plenty of crushes and
cornhole
and
tropical drinks. And yeah, it's just, it's one of those places when it's beautiful outside and you grab and you get to snag a spot out there. You're like, am I even in Baltimore anymore? Like, you just feel like you're on vacation. So
yeah.
I'm glad it's not going to be empty for a lot longer.
Me too. I'm excited about that. And speaking of Raw Bars and seafood offerings, the Urban Oyster opened in McHenry Row. Yeah, so this is a pop-up from Chef Jasmine Norton that a lot of people may be familiar with. She had popped up at our house and, you know,
farmers markets.
Yeah, she's been everywhere for the last few years. So it's really exciting that she gets to have this new home base for herself. It's a beautiful space. I think it's cool. She really only took a couple of months to transform what was kind of like this trendy, dimly lit sushi bar in McHenry Row into this really bright and airy, beautiful. It has like high ceilings, white walls. The benches have like pops of bronze in them. There's this really beautiful canvas artwork. It's like oyster portraits made by an Annapolis artist. Her name is Kim Hubble, and they're beautiful. They take up lots of wall space.
The pictures you showed me looked awesome, because you actually were able to go this week, right?
I was able to go, yeah. I was able to go and meet with Jasmine, see the space, and it really seems like it's going to be awesome. And she's going to be offering lots of seafood. Obviously, her char-grilled oysters are a staple. The raw oysters, shrimp tacos, burgers topped with crab dip, fried cod sandwiches, and also really hyper-local drinks. There'll be Union beers and wine from Old Westminster, so she's keeping it local.
And Aaron's doing the cocktails, did
Aaron
I see?
Joseph, yeah. He's going to be consulting on their cocktail menu, so she's really
from
excited
from Wit & Wisdom
that.
Fame, and Aaron's really talented, and so I'm glad to see that he's consulting with her. That's perfect.
Yes, it does seem like a perfect fit. And so I got a chance to speak with Jasmine and see the space this week, and here's a little bit of what she had to say about it.
So Jasmine, you've been in the pop-up game for so long. You've been at festivals and markets and our house, and now you're finally settling into a brick and mortar of your own. How does it feel?
It's definitely surreal.
Yeah.
I would say it's been a long time coming, but not as far as time, but like it's a lot of work that's put in, you know, behind being mobile. Basically, you're like setting up a kitchen and bringing it down and setting it up and bringing it down everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And while I definitely enjoy it, I'm happy that we can, you know, offer, you know, a sheltered environment that's inviting and, you know, warm and all those good things as well. A lot of times, like I mentioned before on another media platform, was that we disappear in the fall and winter, just because, you know, the festivals, they die down and the markets die down, you know, for the season, and then we're like in this odd spot where people are like wanting and craving what we, you know, what they know us for having, but we don't have.
Right, they can't find you.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, you know, in some of those times we've been able to do pop-ups at our house, but usually have to, you know, find where you can fit in on their schedule, because, you know, it's constantly been different concepts in that space. So I'm just happy that we can, you know, be able to be somewhere on a daily basis, whether it's rain or shine, and, you know, give that same energy and service that we give offsite.
Yeah, built this home. This
exactly.
is going to be your home base.
Exactly.
It's great. So I love how you were mentioning kind of the similarities and differences kind of logistics-wise, but when it comes to the menu, what can people expect here? Are there things that you can do here that you maybe couldn't have
Absolutely.
In a smaller space?
Yeah. Absolutely. and I always reference our house because that's where we were able to, I mean, that's the whole point of the pop-up. It's a test kitchen, allows you to get the experience of what a restaurant would be like, you know, on a less, you know, like contractual, you know, obligation.
Yeah.
So what we have been able to do as far as menu testing was figure out what people tend to gravitate more offsite and what they tend to gravitate more indoors. So things like our crab cakes and our smoked salmon burgers aren't the most popular, like when we're at markets and festivals, because people would rather eat something that requires one hand rather than two.
Right.
So then when we're offsite, they want our tacos, they want our shrimp in our shrimp basket and things like that, or our char grill. Now, they don't care where we are for the char grill.
The char grill.
They'll use four hands for the char grill.
So good.
But we've been able to incorporate specials that we've tried at our house that we'll be able to offer here now. For instance, we did a special with a lobster roll croissant that we'll be able to offer here now. We've done what's called a bay burger, which is basically like a Rosetta Farms Angus beef burger with crab dip and lettuce, tomato, and onion on it. So we get to experiment a little bit more because we have the space and the storage and the platform to do so.
Yeah.
We even want to do things like, a lot of people always are intrigued. I don't know if it's because I'm a female or because it truly is a difficult thing to shuck oysters. So when we've done like oyster night, on Thursdays over at our house, people are always so like intrigued by the whole idea of shucking.
Yeah.
So eventually we want to offer like shuck and sip classes.
I love
where
that.
Where we'll give like, you know, educational background on different tastes, you know, and waters that oysters come from and pair them with wine and beer that go well with them. So a lot of exciting things. And then you may know that we did the Urban Burger Bar.
Yes, that's right. The pop-up at our house.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So until we find a, you know, a permanent space for the Urban Burger Bar, we'll do pop-ups in here on Monday nights
so
from
cool.
5 to 9. Okay. That'll be powered by the Urban Burger Bar. And so it'll be, you'll be able to build your own burger with toppings that we have to offer, like, you know, avocado, egg, bacon, you name it, jalapeno.
That sounds so good. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll do that, and that'll kind of serve as like a reinforcement for people to know that the Urban Burger Bar is still around and it's still alive, and they can still, you know, indulge in that portion of our business as well.
So great to hear from Jasmine. I'm really psyched for her. That's going to be such a cool new go-to space in Lucas Point.
It's always fun to see when people go from these pop-ups and stalls and farmers markets to brick and mortar. You just feel like so triumphant for them and that all their hard work has paid off. I'm sure she's super stressed, although she sounded like in good spirits.
Oh, she definitely did.
Yeah.
I mean, she was meeting with people who were coming in to measure things and bring drop-off packages and things like that. But I think she's just really excited to
And that's open,
open.
Open now.
Open now, yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's a little bit of what I've been doing this week. What have you been up to? I know you've been doing lots and lots of brewery reporting this week.
Yeah, so it seems like this time every year we're getting some news out of the legislature about brewery laws. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've done a lot of reporting on it.
Oh,
I've done a lot of reporting on it. You've gone to some hearings. We've live streamed hearings.
Yes.
And I know a lot of this stuff can feel super wonky to the average, you know, reader and consumer, but it's really important. I kind of talked about in my story, like when you take a sip of beer, you're not thinking about all the hard work that led up to the fact that you can be in a tap room next to where that is produced and you're allowed to be drinking this stuff, because the people at Brewers Association of Maryland and lobbyists and delegates and senators have been fighting for this stuff for years now.
Yep.
And so a lot of that felt like a big victory this week when the Brewery Modernization Act of 2019 was passed. So this has been sort of a long time coming. They've gone, the pendulum has swung back and forth with these kinds of laws over the past few years. And really what it comes down to is increased taproom sales, production capability, loosening some regulations that are just really antiquated that have to do with self-distribution and wholesalers and distributors, and expanding hours of operation. So it's these things where these products are in demand and they just need to make sure the laws are reflecting what people want. Otherwise, you're going to be stifling growth of breweries. So we're really excited. Basically, sort of the highlights that I got into in my story are that class five breweries, so those are your, you know, your like unions and your monuments and, and all of those, now have, they've increased taproom limits to 5,000 barrels per year. And same with class seven microbreweries, so that's like your Nepenthes and your Brewers Arts. Those are also increased to 5,000 barrels per year in the taproom. And then something else that's pretty huge is that for all of those kinds of breweries that I just mentioned and farm breweries, you can now brew at an offsite location. So
that's
let's
huge.
Say, yeah, like yeah. let's say before Union moved, they just wanted to brew more beer in a warehouse, but they wanted to keep their spot.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't they could have done that now. So it's like we are so comfortable in our spot, but we know we have the higher demand and we don't have to pick up everything and move. So
right.
I think a lot of people are going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I remember 2 years ago, contract brewing was such a big point of contention in those hearings. You know, you think of places like Full Tilt, which now has its own facility, but started brewing out of Peabody Heights. And so I think I'm happy. It kind of seems like over the last 2 years, there have been things that the breweries have wanted and maybe have had to compromise on, but now they've gotten to a point where like they feel good. They feel good about what they've achieved and how they've achieved it too, because I know things got a little heated last year.
Yes.
You know, I was listening into a lot of these and even being there in person, you know, there's just this really unnecessary negativity, I feel, that has been a thing between the legislators and the breweries, and now it just really, it feels positive. I don't know if you agreed.
Totally. I mean, I think what was interesting, I loved your line of the story last year. You were like, the gloves came off in the session.
I remember.
If you watched the live stream, you could feel the tension. But talking to Kevin Addicks, who's the executive director of the Brewers Association of Maryland, he said that they weren't, this year they really did it smart, and they went with, they did their research. They always do their research, but they went with delegates that they knew were, you know, in full support and knowledgeable about these kind of laws and parameters. And they didn't ask for pie in the sky numbers. They asked for something that was felt more reasonable,
right,
that people could really get behind. And there was a little bit more logic in what they were asking. A couple, another thing that we need to mention is that there was also the beer franchise law reform got passed, and this was something that hadn't been touched since 1974.
That is crazy to me.
Yes.
That it's been that long since this has been even looked at or reconsidered or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, they, and when you think about it, the craft beer boom, you know, has happened just even so recently. So the fact that nothing's been updated since 74 is crazy. And what Kevin was telling me, which was really interesting, I never thought about it, but basically, this law has to do with making loosening the regulations when it comes to the brewery and the distributor relationship.
Right.
So right now, it's really, really hard to get out of a contract with your distributor. Mm-hmm. You have to give them 180 days notice, which is half a year.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Whoever knows what they're doing in 6 months.
Exactly.
I do not.
No.
And you have to have a good cause in quotes, which also, like, who knows what that means.
Right, that's, like, really ambiguous.
Yeah.
Nobody would, yeah.
It's like, what is that?
Right.
So, and what he was telling me is back then, the breweries were the big kahunas in town. They were the big Anheuser-Busch, the Budweisers, and the distributors were the mom-and-pop shops. So this law was designed to protect the distributors from not getting screwed over by these big breweries. Now there's been a reversal of power. So the distributors are the big guys. The breweries are the small guys.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is they feel like they're trapped a little bit in
these relationships. Yeah, it's totally flip-flopped as time has gone on.
Yeah. And in another example of compromise, now the law is, I believe it's 45 days, which is, 45 days notice, which is a lot more lenient.
Totally, like 180.
Which is great. And then the last thing that came out of this, which I think people are going to be really excited about, relates to distilleries. And it was so interesting. I was talking to Max over at Baltimore Spirits Company, and he pointed out that, you know, wineries sort of led the path for these kind of laws back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Breweries are following suit, and now distilleries are sort of taking that trail that those two have kind of paved. And so distilleries still are, you know, kind of at the beginning of this in some ways, but they, as of July 1st, distilleries will be able to now serve cocktails with an amended Class 1 license. So it's similar to what exists, which is a Class 9. So you'll see places like Blackwater, Old Line, even Secrets and Ocean City. Their distilleries can have cocktails. But this is a new Class 1 license, so that can be applied to other distilleries in Baltimore. And, of course, you still need to apply and get the liquor license and get it created. So Max was very quick to say this isn't, you know, we still have a long road ahead.
There's still work to do.
But he said now we feel like we have a clear path. And if you've been to Baltimore Spirits Company, I mean, they have this beautiful tasting room and bar.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, so many customers come in there and say, oh, why can't I have my gin in a gin and tonic?
Right.
And, you know, you have to explain that the laws just aren't made that way yet. So just some really, really exciting stuff coming out of the legislature for beer and for spirits. And I'm just really excited. I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, it's job creation, it's economic impact.
Absolutely.
And people want it. I mean, you go to Union or Monument on a Saturday and it's packed.
Yes.
So this is something that the people are asking for. And just kudos to the Brewers Association. I know Brad Rifkin, who's the lobbyist, was a big proponent of getting this done. And so I think they were there until midnight, I heard.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me, actually. I remember some of these hearings used to go on and on and on for like 8 or more hours, which is crazy. But it's just like you were saying, it's just such a good representation of, you know, the passion that's there and the people that really care so much to get us to a place where, you know, our breweries feel supported and they feel like they can really have some longevity and do some great work. And you're right, economy has so much to do with it as well.
Yeah.
There's so just, I think, so much more than meets the eye when it comes to this kind of stuff. And it's great that they finally feel like they're in a place where some good work is being done.
Totally. Yeah. And so there's next time you take a sip of beer, yes. remember think about all the work that came before you. Think about all the delegates sitting there till midnight. And we're just really excited. So you can read more about that on our website. And you can even see Lauren has so much great reporting for the past few years if you want background on it. Like I said, this stuff can feel wonky, but at the end of the day, it just means more Maryland beer and,
yes.
and that's and spirits, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, just looking at how craft beer has evolved in the last few years, and wineries and distilleries as well. I mean, our distillery is like winning national awards, yeah. the San Francisco Spirits Competition, Baltimore Spirits Company, and Sagamore Spirit. You know, yeah. so many great things that are really happening for our drink scene, and we're just so psyched that we're in a good place.
Yeah,
which
definitely.
Is good.
What have you been working on? I know you've got this story you've been working on for a little while, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So the Little Italy story, I am really psyched about it. We just kind of thought, we actually dug through our archives a couple months ago and found a story from like the mid-90s about Little Italy and kind of where it was at that point. And I think since then, there has been so much growth and so much evolution. Obviously, a lot of change. We've seen a lot of closings there. We've seen a lot of construction currently. There are a lot of things happening. But I think it seemed like a really good time to check in with Little Italy mm-hmm. and see how the businesses are doing, get to know some of the new players that have came in, and also, you know, check in with the OGs, you know, those old school restaurant owners that have been there forever. And I've really enjoyed getting to know a lot of them, and I've enjoyed working on the story. Tonight, actually, I'm going to the Pandola Learning Center, which is a huge staple in the community. Miss Rosalie is the principal, and she's so sweet.
I don't know anything about this woman, but I love her already.
Yes, exactly.
From the name.
Yes, and she actually invited me to a cheese making class, which I'm really excited to check out.
That's so fun.
It's actually, when I was younger, I remember I was not a fan of cheese.
Really?
Which is weird. Yes. Isn't it weird?
That's weirdest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Right. Like mac and cheese. Like I would
string
cheese.
Yes.
I would eat like American cheese slices, like as a snack.
Oh, like Kraft Singles.
Oh yeah. That was like my jam when I was little. Yes. So you didn't like cheese?
I didn't like cheese when I was little. I wouldn't eat string cheese. I wouldn't eat like slices. Cream cheese also, which is so strange.
You like bagels, don't
I
you?
I know, bagels and cream cheese. So it's so strange. But now, like, this kind of stuff gets me excited. I love charcuterie. Like, going to the wine source and putting together, like, a fun little cheese board is always so fun. So anyway, on a personal note, this will be a great experience for me. But also, I'm excited to continue that reporting. And I'm excited to see how that story is going to come together.
It's been so, cool to hear your stories just from the reporting. Just
yeah.
speaking to people whose, you know, parents have lived there and have generations and have so much pride in the neighborhood mm-hmm. and so much passion. And then new people that have come in and are bringing, like, a fresh perspective.
Yes.
I think you do hear about closings in Little Italy and you get sad because mm-hmm. it's, you know, a historic cultural neighborhood in Baltimore. And but at the same time, it does have to evolve.
Yes.
And that, you know, our food scene has changed and it has to keep up with it. So I can't wait to read your story.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
There's a lot of intricacies to it. But I do think that the common goal among business owners, residents, people who are invested in the community is that they want it to be there for years and years and years to come. So, you know, despite all of the, you know, conversations that people have and disagreements at some times, which I think all neighborhoods have, I think that they're all working towards this common goal, which is really beautiful to see. So psyched about that story. I have a feeling that something from the cheese class might be my best bite next week. but this week I'll talk about, I actually went to Nick's Fish House.
Nice.
The weather has been so nice.
Oh, it's been beautiful.
I know I shouldn't knock on wood because it's a podcast, but I'm really hoping that we see the temperatures continue to climb.
Yeah, this is like the sweet spot.
Yes.
When it's like 70s, not humid.
Right.
If it was like this all year round, it would be amazing.
Yeah.
We need to move to San Diego, I guess. But
oh my gosh.
It's a beautiful time to go to Nick's.
Yes, definitely. So I loved it. Had a spicy cocktail. I know Jane was making fun of me last week. She was like, I hear that you get spicy after your spicy cocktail. It was one of the funniest things she's ever said.
I heard that.
It was hilarious. But yeah, I also had their seafood cob salad, which is one of my favorite salads. It's a basic cob with like your hard-boiled egg and bacon and avocado, but they also put some like lump crab meat and shrimp in there. It's massive. It's literally like three meals. and they have an Old Bay Ranch that makes it a little spicy. So it was kind of
perfect. Old Bay Ranch sounds great.
Yeah.
Were you sitting outside, like on the deck?
Yep.
Overlooking the bridge and everything.
It was kind of like in that moment, like everything I wanted in life was just like in that salad and the spicy margarita, and it was awesome. And
that's another sunset, that's another spot where you feel like you're on vacation.
Yeah. And people, you know, I think just really love those spots, which is why it's so exciting about Boathouse coming back. But yeah, I think that was my best bite this week. What about you?
That's a good one. No, it's funny. Ours are like weirdly similar.
Oh, okay.
I mean, different enough, but they're both seafood salads. So I got to go to the Chef Cycle fundraiser at Gunther on Tuesday. So Chef Cycle is this really cool event that they do every year. I think it's either the third or fourth annual. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But it's a bike ride, a 300-mile bike ride in California, and all the proceeds benefit No Kid Hungry. And the idea is that chefs and restaurant owners, restaurateurs, pastry chefs are actually the ones on the bikes.
So cool.
Super cool. And so Jerry Trison and Nancy from Gunther have been doing this, and they actually hosted a fundraiser at Gunther this past Tuesday and got some of the best restaurants in Baltimore to come together. And each table had a dish and a cocktail, and everything was so good. I mean, it was just one of those nights where you're just like, I'm so lucky to live in Baltimore. Like, everything was great. It was really cool, too, because a lot of, like, the head chefs and owners of the restaurants were actually the ones doing the passing out of the food. So it just felt really hands-on.
Yes.
So the first bite I had, I think, was my favorite bite. Everything was really good. But Magdalena had this Maryland crab salad.
Yum.
It was so good. It was like the perfect kind of cool, refreshing salad for that night. It was made with lime leaf mayo, a curried tater tot that they were frying them to order. I know. It was crazy.
That sounds amazing.
Chili jam and pickled melon. And it was one of those dishes where if you can get all of those little things in one bite, it's like euphoria. It's so good.
Yeah, I feel like yours is like the fine dining version of like incorporating seafood into it. You know what I mean?
It's like if Top Chef had to make a dish based on your dish, they'd make this dish.
Yes, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, it was so good. I mean, I wasn't surprised that Magdalena was turning out something so innovative and beautiful.
Yes.
The colors were awesome.
Oh, sure.
And I have to give a shout to the Levenfeld brothers of La Cuchara and Minnow. Jake made a cocktail called No Adult Sober.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
And it was bright orange, just like the No Kid Hungry logo. Yeah. So his creativity was on full display. It was a tequila cocktail with like a red pepper tincture. It was so good.
It's so cool.
Everything we had there that night, Flying Dog debuted their new Underdog beer, which is low proof, which was really nice to try that. There were like Sagamore Spirit cocktails. There were Baltimore Whiskey cocktails and Baltimore Spirits cocktails.
Yes.
And it was just, it was a great night all around, and it's all for a good cause. So
I think that it's so cool how many champions of No Kid Hungry we've seen in the local food scene. I mean, this is a cause that I think a lot of local chefs have been supporting for years now. I know Zach Mills, who used to be at Wit and Wisdom, is now opening a new restaurant in Whitehall Mill, has been a huge champion for No Kid Hungry.
Chad at Food Market.
Chad, yes.
Brian Voltaggio, we've seen.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it's so cool to see them all come together. You know, these are all chefs that I think a lot of people you know, get to know at their respective restaurants, but seeing them all in
or think they might be competitive or something.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. They're all buds, you know, mm-hmm. Like they all hang out, and they, especially at these events, they're so excited to like try each other's dishes and see what everyone else is up to. So I think it's really cool that there's a common cause that a lot of the people in the local food scene can rally around, and these fundraisers are always such a great success. So.
Yeah, no, it was a fun time. I felt, like I said, just felt really lucky to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was good. That was a pretty good best bite for this week. I'm not usually that fancy, but.
Oh, but no, that's a great one. It worked out. You were on the podcast this week.
Yeah, thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you so much for being on.
Oh,
this is so
anytime.
Fun.
Anytime. Like I said, I'm so jealous of Jane right now, but
I
am so glad she's having a great time.
Me too. Yeah, I've seen some posts on social media. She looks like she is killing it. So we will definitely hear more from Jane about her trip to Italy on next week's podcast. Jess, thank you so much. Thank you all
much
for listening. And as always, you can pick up a copy of our April issue, which is now on newsstands, and you can check out our food coverage every day at BaltimoreMagazine.com.
The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.